Students on the First Coast and around the country plan to walk out of class tomorrow morning as part of their push for gun reform and an end to school shootings. Find out what the kids are planning in just a moment. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, a look ahead to tomorrow's big school walkout. Find out why local students say they'll be taking part. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. What do you think about this? Let us know. Then later, it's today's Movable Feast, looking at the fine art of hospitality. Plus, our monthly First Coast Connect book club goes inside the pages of the novel Little Fires Everywhere. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this hour, students across the country and here in Northeast Florida say they will walk out of school at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's part of the national Never Again movement, being led in large part by young people as they protest school shootings and call for gun reform in America. The plan is for Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock to see students at schools nationwide walk out of class or at least gather in the hallway for 17 minutes, 1 minute for each of the victims in last month's school shooting in Parkland, Florida. The school walkout has galvanized teenagers around the country, but it's also raised big questions for schools about how to handle protests. Where is the fine line between students' right to free speech and schools' responsibility? There's a lot to discuss here, and of course, this walkout tomorrow is a bit of a teaser toward another big event planned in Washington later this month called March for Our Lives. We begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome in studio Patrick O'Donohue. He's a local Jacksonville parent who's assisting some of the students in tomorrow's walkout. Patrick, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And in a moment, we'll go to several students that are planning to walk out tomorrow. Mia Cleary of Ponte Vedra High School, Ajay Sarma, a student at Nice High School, and more. The number to join the show is 549-2937. What do you think about this? Give us a call at 549-2937 or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and we welcome your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page as well. Patrick O'Donohue, you have a student who will be attending Fishware Elementary next year. How did you get involved in this, and why are the students all planning, and how many students are planning to walk out in our area tomorrow morning?
I got involved just through Facebook out of concern after the Parkland shooting wanting to do something. I heard about the March for Our Lives movement, and I got started on Facebook and started gathering people for a March for Our Lives Jack's local march. And we have one planned on March 24th, Saturday morning, 11 a.m. at Hemming Park. And as part of that movement, we've been supporting some efforts.
You're supporting the high school students.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have some high school students on the line right now. Mia Cleary is a senior at Ponte Vedra High School. Mia, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, so you're planning to walk out at 10 o'clock tomorrow. What's going to be happening tomorrow at Ponte Vedra High School?
So tomorrow at Ponte Vedra High School, we are going to have a mixture of both a thoughts and prayers walkout, but also a memorial, but also a political statement. We were told we are not allowed to have signs, so instead we are going to have a political statement by wearing orange, and we are going to encourage as many people in the student body to wear the color orange. And we are going to be passing out legislative cards so people can call their senators and voice their opinions on how they feel regarding gun reform.
Mia, how many kids are going to take part in this at Ponte Vedra High? And what are your school, what's your principal and your school administration telling you about this? Are they supporting it?
So our school is kind of taking more or less of a neutral stance on the entire matter. They don't want to, of course, they want to elevate our voices, but they don't necessarily want to bring politics. That's kind of the feel. I'm not actually the one planning it for Ponte Vedra High School. That is going to be done by a senior named Nick Farmulero. But they're kind of having a neutral stance. Like, they want us to be able to have our political opinions, but they don't want us to disrupt. I know different schools have different policies, but that's the one that our school is going with.
But they're allowing the walkout, it sounds like?
Yes.
And you won't, will you face any punishment, a suspension, detention, anything like that?
Not for the walkout. The event coordinator has allowed us to do the walkout for a memorial purpose, just to kind of remember the students that have passed away for 17 minutes. And they have allowed that. Our event coordinator has actually taken over that. But they do not want us having signs or banners or like kind of being rowdy because they don't want us to disrupt the people that might be there trying to remember. So we're going to save like that idea of like protesting for the March for Our Lives event.
Okay, Mia, thanks for that. I'm going to put you on hold for a minute and put on the air Ajay Sarma. He's a junior at Nice High School, also in St. John's County. Ajay, what's happening tomorrow at Nice High?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. And the event, I expect, will be fairly similar to what's happening at Ponte Vedra High School. Our school administration isn't necessarily taking any sort of political stance, and they've stated that the event is mostly to show solidarity with the students of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. But as long as students aren't aggressive or rowdy, the expectation is that they will be able to express themselves freely. But I don't believe signs or banners will be allowed.
No signs or banners. How many students at Nice High School do you think will walk out? How widespread is this protest?
I've definitely seen a lot of people supporting it through social media and other means. It's definitely something that's very popular with the student body at Nice. I don't know exactly how many people would walk out, but the fact that the superintendent of the St. John's County Public School System has said that it's all right for students to walk out, and the fact that our administration will not be disciplining students for doing so has definitely allowed for the numbers to grow, for sure.
So, Patrick O'Donohue, this is a very unscientific sample, but at least down in St. John's County, it appears as though administrators are allowing this and not, and the kids won't face repercussions?
Yes, ma'am.
And so, has there been coordination on this front from the adults as you work with the high school students about this, or is this sort of more an organic movement that's just cropping up at all the schools through spreading through social media?
I would say the walkout has been more organic. It's a school-by-school basis as to whether the administrators are going to allow it, and it's spreading through the students, through their contacts, social media, whatnot.
Okay, yeah, sure. And Monique Sampson is also with us. She is at UNF, president of that school's chapter of Students for a Democratic Society. Monique Sampson, good morning to you. How are college students playing a part? Good morning. How are college students playing a part in this, like yourself?
Right. So college students, we are planning a banner drop. We want to like tell people that we don't want to arm teachers, but instead we want to arm teachers with supplies and materials and the knowledge on how to handle these situations, because we don't believe militarizing teachers is the, great response to that, especially given the fact that these students have been traumatized already by gun violence.
Okay. So you're showing support in that regard. Of course, Florida just passed a new law signed by the governor, $400 million yes. allocated toward greater school safety measures and the potential to arm some teachers, although that'll be looked at on a district by district basis. No assault Correct. Weapons ban in Florida. This is what a lot of the high school students have been calling for. And that is not happening in this state. So what is the goal then of this whole day tomorrow? How would you sum up this goal, given where the state is legislatively on this issue?
Right. So I guess the whole goal for tomorrow's walkouts is to just show solidarity amongst the student body that, hey, we don't ever want this to happen again. And we want someone to be held accountable for it. So whether it's our governors, whether it's our, representatives, we want someone to say, hey, we're taking a stand with students against this type of violence.
All right. And Patrick O'Donohue, as we continue talking to the young people, this, as you said, is a warm-up, I guess, for the big March for Our Lives event. There'll be a huge march in Washington and in communities across the U.S., including this one. What would you say to parents listening out there right now who would disagree with your efforts and say you shouldn't be encouraging students to walk out, that this is not the best way to address this issue, to walk out of class? And I'm sure we're going to get some calls to that regard, in that regard, saying, "This, I don't agree with this tactic."
I guess I would say that the majority of the American people support things like an assault weapons ban, universal background checks, bump stocks ban. You know, these ideas have broad support, bipartisan support, and yet our legislature is not reflecting those ideas. And so we have to express our will some way. And this seems like one of the best. I'm not sure that it is, but we're going forward with it.
Okay, let's go to a few of your calls now as we talk about tomorrow's school walkout. Kids across the area and the country plan to walk out of class tomorrow morning for 17 minutes. That's the number of people that were killed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School last month. What do you think? 549-2937. Gil is on the south side. Go ahead, Gil.
Yeah, hi, Melissa. Yeah, I was thinking that this is a really good idea for the students. But the thing that is so important is that the protest is good for awareness, but it is not good for getting things done. If you look back in history, when Rosa Parks sat in the bus, nothing happened until the Montgomery bus boycott. Then you got changes. Or when you had the teacher strike last week, when they walked out, they got changes. The teachers got changes. When they had the South African problem there, when they boycotted businesses, they got changes. So when money is involved, changes actually happen. We need to get these guns off the streets, but unless we start boycotting business, unless there is some financial incentive for them to make changes, nothing will happen except for awareness.
All right. Thanks, Gil. Let's go back to Mia Cleary at Ponte Vedra High School. Mia, I hope you're able to hear that caller. And he's saying protests like the one you're going to engage in raise awareness, but real change comes from economic pressure. What do you think about that? Is it your goal tomorrow to just raise awareness?
I think it's even more than raising awareness. This, again, is a student-led movement, so there's only so much that students can do with their voices. We don't have the right to vote. And I think the entire purpose of this movement is so that way we can encourage students from a young age to begin getting involved in the legislative process. I mean, 4 million high school seniors are going to be able to vote in this next coming election, and it's really important that...
Are you one of them? Have you registered to vote?
I have registered to vote, and I will be voting for the first time.
Okay. And are you 18 yet or about to turn 18?
Yeah, I turned 18 in July.
Okay. Let's go to AJ over at Nice High School. AJ, what are your parents telling you about this, by the way? What are they saying to you about your plans to walk out?
So, actually, my parents have been very supportive of my involvement in this movement. And that's not always been the case with my political involvement in the community, but in this case, like, both my parents care very deeply about the safety of our schools, because I also have a little sister, and it's definitely the shooting scared them, but they are also extremely glad that students like myself and Mia are taking a stand and are trying to bring about as much change as we can.
Are you planning to physically leave the school building tomorrow or just stand in the hallway? And will it be for the 17 minutes, which is apparently what other districts are doing around the country? How is this being organized at Nice?
Yes. So the agreement was essentially that we would be allowed to leave class for 17 minutes and gather in a courtyard. But because of safety issues, we're not allowed to leave campus.
I see. Okay. Lots of calls on this. Let's go quickly to John at the Beaches. Hi, John. You're on the air. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Melissa, thank you very much for having such a great program.
Sure.
And giving these kids a voice. I want to first commend the kids all everywhere on their efforts. I mean, that's to be applauded. However, I think if we really look at what's going on here, is that so the goal is to stop school shootings, right? That's the ultimate goal. And actually, the ultimate goal is to save lives. The real reasons behind these shootings is the individual. And the individuals in these cases, with very few exceptions, they've been they're students themselves. They've been marginalized. They've been ignored. They've been bullied. They've been teased. So instead of marching out of school, how about the students take all that effort and pledge each and every one of them to not tease anyone, to instead care about each other, to look after each other, to not marginalize each other. And that will stop school shootings. They can be their own eyes and ears. They can care for each other. And therefore, troubled individuals will either be supported, cared for, or spotted.
Okay, John, thanks for that. And let's ask Mia Clary what she thinks about that. John, or Mia, did you hear what John said?
I did. I believe that this is more of an issue of just certainly teasing and marginalizing people is one component of it, but it's so much more than that. At the root tends to be, or occasionally has been, mental illnesses. In Florida, there is not a good mental health system in general based on personal experience. But even more than that, the fact that they have a gun, if they don't have a gun, then they can't kill people with a gun. It's just as simple as that.
Okay. And Patrick O'Donohue, the parent in all this, what are your thoughts about the legislative package that the governor just signed? And some of it does include more focus on dealing with troubled kids' mental health issues. What about that?
Well, I would say my concern is that it doesn't go far enough, that the legislature now has something they can hang their hats on, something to say, we've done something, so they can move past it, silence the public. But we don't want them to just do something. We want them to do everything in their power to make our kids safe at school and in public places. We want them to do everything in their power to stem gun violence in our country because it's a public health crisis. And we should be approaching that public health crisis from all sides.
And jammed lines as we talk to students and parents involved in tomorrow's planned school walkout. What do you think? Caroline is at the beaches. Caroline, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I agree completely that there should be multimodal approaches to this, but I also think that having a school walkout brings more awareness, and these things are happening in their schools. They don't feel safe in their schools, so that is where they feel that they should protest. I think we should stand behind them, and everyone should get on board with what they're doing.
Thanks for that. Ajay Sarma at Nice High School. Do you feel unsafe in your high school? How do you feel about it?
I wouldn't necessarily say that I feel. Actually, no. I'll let me amend that. I think it's definitely something that the student body now has to constantly be confronted with, that the possibility that there could be a school shooting really at any school at any time. It's not something that is really restricted to, it's almost like an epidemic across our country, really. And so in many ways, I do think that myself and other students do feel unsafe, which is one of the catalysts for this whole movement, because school shouldn't be a place where students feel unsafe.
Okay, and we're getting a comment about that on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. CJ writes, find out how and why our high schools have so many unmonitored access points where anyone can come and go without notice. The kids demanding change will use these same points to go out tomorrow, while teachers and administrators will not be able to track who's coming and going. Mandarin High School has at least 4 places where one can get onto school grounds without notice. Patrick O'Donohue, this comes back to the legislation that was passed that looked at school hardening measures, making the physical campus safer. What about that comment that just appeared on our Facebook page?
I was in high school in the early 2000s, after Columbine, and my high school had similar school hardening measures. They tried to keep it on lockdown. All of the entryways had gates that rolled down. All the doors were locked. But doors are propped open. There are ways around
sure,
it.
Sure, there's ways to get in. Mia Cleary at Ponte Vedra High School. What about the access points at Ponte Vedra High School and all the measures that have been taken there?
Yeah, so regarding, we actually have a system where to lock a door, you have to go outside of the door and lock it. And I believe Parkland has the exact same, or Margie Stoneman Douglas has the same type of doors, which is, it doesn't really serve a very good purpose if you have to go outside to lock a door. So now they have implemented these strips in the doors, so the door doesn't actually lock completely. And if you pull away the strip, it'll lock automatically. And that has helped us feel safer. Along with, I think for the walkout tomorrow, we have already contacted different security measures because we have a deputy who's on campus, or a sheriff who's on campus at all times. So I think they're going to like be increasing the security measures for the walkout tomorrow. I don't feel unsafe. I think that the reason why this shooting made us feel so unsafe was because Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was a school just like Ponte Vedra High School, just like Nice. And it is easy to get onto a school campus, but it's easier. I think it would make us feel even safer if people didn't have access to a gun.
Okay. Jay on the South Side. Hi, Jay. I know you've been holding a long time. Jay, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I actually used to teach at Mandarin High School, so I'm glad that you just brought them up. Incredibly unsafe campus. I had a meeting many years ago with the current principal there, who makes over $100,000 a year and is retiring this year, so has an incentive to kind of ride it out right now. And I had a morning where a student came to my door, and I opened the door, and her father came out of nowhere and confronted me, and we had kind of a, you know, intense situation. He was demanding that I do this and that and the other. And so when I ended up meeting with the security team who informed me to put together a presentation, I gave a 45-minute security presentation, and I was actually laughed out of the room by the administrative team. And
how long ago was
later,
that? Jay, how long ago was that?
This was about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And I have a quote here from the principal who wrote that she is, quote, not sure how to eliminate your fears and can only assure you that we're working as hard as we can. And I can say as a teacher, it's not just students who fear violence on campus. It's definitely me as well. Had I been an armed teacher, I would have had a totally different way I could have responded to that threat at my door. And because of this, I've been blacklisted in Duval County Schools for speaking out. And for students, you know, we talk about civic education. This is the greatest lesson that they could be doing today. From Rosa Parks to Nelson Mandela and MLK Jr., nonviolent civil disobedience is the only way to bring permanent change. Organize your own school safety panel. Independent of school leadership, people have too much interest and money in the fire to make significant change. But the next generation, take control of your elders by voting. Organize your own means. Even if you're not registered to vote, you can still go knock door to door for the people that you believe in. But I would definitely look into some security guards at Mandarin High. One of them I know was having inappropriate conversations with students, via text in the middle of class, and it was just a mess.
All right,
and
Jay.
So I really
thanks
think
for
I put
sharing.
My neck out
yeah, thanks for sharing your story
on.
There. Thank you, Jay. Nonviolent civil disobedience. That's what this is, Patrick.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. And he made a point about being armed and. That's something that we're all in agreement in our group that the last thing we need is an armed teacher.
You disagree with that.
Shooting a parent or student.
Evan on the South Side, what do you think, Evan? Okay, Evan, give us a call back. Jewel in Ponte Vedra. Jules, is that your name?
Yes, Jewel.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. So I heard your niece and PV students say that their administrations have taken neutral roles on this. And gosh, I wish that were the case at their nearest middle school, Valley Ridge Academy. The school announced in all homerooms and sent an email home stating, quote, students will be participating in the walkout. Everyone's walking out of their classroom. They have no choice to just stay in their seat and not have their day disrupted. Everyone's walking out. And if parents say in advance that they don't want their student participating, then those students will be, quote, relocated to a different classroom. So the middle school has taken an active role in promoting the walkout and has put the kids in a position, which I think is really unfair. If they don't want to participate, they're going to be othered and shuffled off into another classroom while the rest of their classmates walk out.
And do you have a child in that middle school?
Yes.
And it sounds like you don't agree with your child participating, maybe?
I don't agree with the kids not being given a choice.
Okay.
I feel that this should be a choice, that the students should, you know, of their own free will, be able to walk out of the classroom if they want to. The problem is Valley Ridge is not giving them that choice. They have to walk out of their classroom. It's just a matter of where they walk to.
I see. Well, Jules, I so appreciate the call on that. That's good information for us. So Mia Cleary over at Ponte Vedra High School, what about that? It sounds like different schools are doing this differently, but what about the point of view of students and parents that might not want to participate and feel that this is disruptive?
I definitely agree that you should have the choice to walk out, whether you be in middle school or in high school. I think that it's important to note that this walkout, specifically the one set for tomorrow, is going to be a mix of both a thoughts and prayers walkout to remember, and I think maybe that's the approach that Valley Ridge may be taking. But I know that definitely students at our school would also like to take a legislative route for people that choose to participate, that choose to want to wear orange, or that choose to want to like take a card and perhaps call their senators. But at the end of the day, you should definitely have a choice in the matter.
Let's take one more call. It's Jason in San Marco. Go ahead, Jason. You're on the air.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I wholeheartedly support the students, although I have children in the public schools in Duval County here in San Marco. And turning you on this morning is the first I've heard about this walkout, but if my kids want to do it, I will inform them about it, and I will support their choice to participate. I just want to say something. The problem in this country is the proliferation of weapons. And that's just the end of the story right there. We have too many weapons. We have too many weapons that are designed to kill mass number of peoples in the hands of common, everyday, ordinary citizens, many of who are not stable, mentally stable. That's the problem. And then we have a president who just takes a call from Wayne LaPierre. Wayne, how should I handle this? He's taking orders from the National Rifle Association, and their answer will be, from now to the end of time, more weapons, more weapons, more weapons. Arm the teacher so that the kid gets used to seeing his teacher with a weapon. Then the kid will be more comfortable with the concept of having his own weapon. The NRA is the lobbying arm of the weapons manufacturers, not really and truly responsible gun owners. So that's the answer you will always get from them. More weapons, more weapons, more weapons. The end result of following that policy is what we are looking at over the last 5 years. More killings, and more killings. And if people who oppose the NRA and their political position will repeat this, maybe it will start to sink into other people's brains. The NRA will always say, more weapons. People who
okay,
don't
Jason.
Agree with that point
gotcha. I got your
resisting.
Point, Jason, and I appreciate the call. Lots of strong feelings, clearly, about this. Mm. Patrick O'Donohue, your final thoughts as we wrap this up.
Like I said earlier, I think that we need to come at it from all sides. And to the caller's point, I agree that it seems like legislators are putting special interests over lives. And I would say to him and everyone listening, come march with us. Walk out tomorrow. We're doing a march at Heming Park, Saturday, March 24th, 11 a.m. We'd love to have everyone's support. Register to vote, sign petitions, make your voice heard.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, parent Patrick O'Donohue, Mia Cleary, a senior at Ponte Vedra High School, Ajay Sarma, a junior at Nice High School, all on the program this morning as they tell us about tomorrow's planned school walkouts. Thanks for being on the program. And much more still ahead. Later, the fine art of hospitality is on the menu in today's Movable Feast. But up next, it's a vital conference for parents and teachers and caregivers. A look at this week's Autism Symposium. Back in a moment.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. When people are hurt through no fault of their own, answering who, what, when, where, why, and how is critical to proving the truth. More at waynehogan.law.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours, available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
With her three kids in the back of the minivan, Ellie Diaz is driving through a tunnel of flames.
Okay, I can do this.
But the next minute,
I would be like screaming, oh my God, we're gonna die. Like, please God, let us live.
Why weren't they warned? California's deadliest wildfires on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. The latest research on medical interventions for autism spectrum disorders will be center stage this week in Jacksonville. As Wolfson Children's Hospital, UF College of Medicine, Jackson Baptist Health all present the 10th annual Autism Symposium Wednesday on the UNF campus. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Celine Sellin and Dr. Nathan Call, both with Marcus Autism Center up in Atlanta. Good morning to you, doctors.
Morning.
Good morning.
Also here in studio, local parent Jackie Bargas and her 18-year-old son, St. John. Jackie, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us, Melissa.
And your son is on the autism spectrum. He's going to perform for us in a little bit. That's going to be exciting. But first, Dr. Sellin, let's begin with you. This is the 10th annual symposium, and it's a vital day of information for anyone who needs to learn more about autism spectrum disorders. What's on the agenda tomorrow?
So we have a lot on the agenda tomorrow. I'll be talking about adaptive behavior or functional practical skills throughout life. My colleague here, Dr. Call, will be talking about severe behavior problems in individuals with autism. And then we have Connie Cassery and Alex Colzavon, who will be talking about neuroimaging and also early treatment.
Okay. And early intervention, Dr. Call, is my understanding, is so critical when you have a diagnosis.
That's exactly right. The research is pretty unequivocal on this point, that the earlier families are able to access empirically supported or evidence-based treatment practices, the better the outcomes.
Okay. What can parents, caregivers, educators, social workers, medical professionals, lots of people that come out tomorrow, what will they come away with perhaps that's new and cutting edge in the field? There's a lot of research happening. Isn't there?
Absolutely. So I think depending on the talks, with Dr. Cassery's talk, we're looking at intervention infants and toddlers. So we know the best outcome comes from early detection followed by intensive intervention. And then also on the other end of the spectrum, those individuals that have significant behavioral problems, that Dr. Call will be talking about how to manage those behaviors, and then functional abilities throughout life.
So much of an autistic kid's issues have to do with behavior, sensory integration, how he or she interacts with their peers. Is some of that going to be discussed?
Absolutely. And there are some real national and international experts on that topic that Dr. Solnay was just discussing. Dr. Cassery and Celine, who was just speaking a second ago, all have tremendous expertise on this topic and are excited to share that with the audience.
And of course, the other experts in the room are the parents, like you, Jackie Bargas. Tell us about your family's journey with your son, St. John.
Well, when the pediatrician first mentioned to us that our son probably was autistic, I was shocked. I had never even heard the word.
Uh-huh.
So it has been quite a journey. But he's doing great. He's wonderful. And we're excited for him to play for you today.
Right. St. John is going to play something on the piano here in a moment, an electric piano. So how would you characterize St. John's progress, and what treatments have you seen with your son that have had the most effect?
Well, we have a whole team. We have a team approach. So it starts with the pediatrician, child psychiatrist, psychologist, behavioral therapist, occupational therapist, speech therapist, special needs teacher, and of course, us as the family. And that's what all of our presenters will be talking about tomorrow. And it takes a team, and I'm sure they all agree with my comment. And so all of those people have helped us throughout the years and continue to do so.
Your son is going to be doing some musical entertainment at a physician's dinner at a tie-in for the symposium. And how has music helped St. John express himself?
Well, you know, he struggles with language, but he expresses himself beautifully with music. He's able to read music, and he actually, I don't mean to sound braggadocious, but he can play six instruments. And because he can read music, it has been an easy transition for him to play other instruments.
How exciting. Well, we're very pleased now. It's a special treat as your son, St. John Bargas, performs right here in studio on the electric piano. What's he going to be playing here?
He's going to be playing Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen.
Okay. Now, we're just going to set up quickly.
Okay.
If you could move that chair out of the way, and he will then step over and perform for us. St. John, thanks so much for doing this. Go ahead. Okay, while they set that up, let's talk very quickly, Dr. Call, about how with so many kids on the spectrum, perhaps a kid like St. John has trouble with language, but they can be gifted in another area. Is this an example of that?
Yeah, so it is the case that a part of the autism diagnosis can include restricted interests, and sometimes that manifests as particular skills. We hear a lot about some of the stereotypes of individuals who have really extraordinary skills, and while that's not every kid, it is the case that kids with autism or individuals and adults with autism, just because they have deficits in some areas, that doesn't mean that they are universally having challenges, and so they can certainly thrive in their own way and with those areas where they have areas of strength.
Okay, and are we ready now? And here we are. Hallelujah. The 10th annual Wilson Children's Hospital UF Jackson Baptist Health Autism Symposium coming up tomorrow on the UNF campus. That was beautiful. Thank you so much, St. John.
Thank you.
Go to wilsonchildrens.org/autism for more information. Doctors, Jackie, St. John, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now we're going to shift gears. Everything from etiquette to attire makes for great hospitality at any top-notch resort. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and entertainment trends around town, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Sandy Galloway, a consultant who trains hospitality and corporate staff.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it to gravy, Davy.
Tell me a little bit about your background in hospitality personally and how you evolved into Sandy Galloway.
I started out at 19 years old in the airline industry and moved through that and
did everything, including being a flight attendant, and remember when people got on airplanes and they were dressed served first-class meals and they knew how to behave on an airplane. And from there, I ended up in the meetings and conventions industry and eventually opened my own company when I moved here to Jacksonville.
What was the genesis of starting Sandy Galloway and doing etiquette and behavior?
I guess just watching the decline sort of bothered me. And I had the opportunity to go back to school and to the Global Protocol Etiquette and Civility Academy in Dallas and get my certification.
Could you tell me that again? What was that
Global
school?
Protocol Etiquette and Civility Academy in Dallas, Texas.
That's fabulous.
And earned my certification to teach. And I've just sort of grown from there, and I just really have a passion to help other people to understand the rules of etiquette and to make their own lives better through etiquette.
What are some of the hints that people need to take away and think about themselves? How to behave? Is it behavior better? Is it awareness of themselves in a social situation? Is it about dressing the part? What are some of the components of what you do when you work with clients?
Lee, it's all of those, but I think it starts with civility because I think civility is the basis on which we build. And from there, learning the rules, whether it's dining or dressing, and making sure that you're appropriate in all situations.
Now, I can understand that from the guest perspective, you know, that we go out to dinner, we go to a club, we are in our business uniforms or, you know, whatever our life is putting us into. But also it has to be mirrored by the people who are serving others.
Exactly. And I think we have sort of slipped on that also. The days of training staff properly to serve in a restaurant, I have seen a huge decline. Back in the day, waiters and waitresses or servers knew to serve from the left, pick up from the right. They knew to wait for the client to show their fork and knife being put on the plate properly, so they knew to pick up or not to pick up. And today, people don't know how to give the wait staff these signals, and the wait staff doesn't know how to read the signals anymore. Simple things like a client walks in white slacks, please give them a white napkin, or a black slacks, give them a black napkin. Little things within the restaurant and the serving industry no longer seem to be every day.
I remember you told me something about working with children and how to get this next generation aware of themselves and how to behave. Is that something that you're working on?
It is, and it's become a passion for me. I'm now working in the St. John County in the Youth Detention Center with young men. And I believe that so many of these children have never had the opportunity to learn these skills at home, so they're not being taught. And after they're being released, they don't have the skills to get around in the world. So I'm going in there as a volunteer, working with them and working with everything from their attire to how they behave, how they react, how they dine. So we're covering everything, even business skills, how to shake hands, introduce people. I feel that if they can go out of St. John.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events. Event venue and catering.
And in a moment, today's book club. We'll be right back.
Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Injuries can happen when you least expect it. For over 40 years, our attorneys have dug out the facts to help juries decide what happened and who's at fault. More at waynehogan.law.
Community hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with investigative journalists Michael Isakoff and David Korn, author of the new book Russian Roulette, the inside story of Putin's war on America and the election of Donald Trump. They've both broken key stories about Trump and the Trump campaign's ties with Russia. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Some of the rules meant to rein in banks after they torched the economy now stand to be undone.
The banks don't want you to know what's in this bill, because if you did know, you'd fight back.
We'll explain what's in the bill and why 13 Democrats are backing it. It's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Donald Trump promised to run government like a business. A year into his presidency, there are still some basic questions about how his business works. What deals are happening? Who are they happening with? And are he and his family keeping their promise to separate the Trump Organization from the Trump White House? We follow the money next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Sponsored by San Marco Books and More.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, with themes ranging from motherhood to privilege to even Jerry Springer. Little Fires Everywhere by best-selling author Celeste Egg is what we're reading this month on the Book Club. Our leader, Stacey Goldring, is here now with a look inside the pages of this book. And you brought some interesting props with you again today here to the radio studio. Paint a picture of the mind for our listeners.
I certainly will. Well, if you've seen the cover of Little Fires Everywhere, it appears that there are some small houses. They're all beautiful. And our book takes place in Shaker Heights. And it also is set up, Melissa, in reverse structure. So I'm not giving away anything by saying in the opening chapter, the house burns down.
Literally.
The house burns down, and you start to see the thread of the little fires everywhere being seeded throughout the book right there in the first chapter. So we're in Shaker Heights, Ohio. Remember, I don't know if you're familiar
with
Shaker.
I am very familiar with Shaker Heights, Ohio.
It's a beautiful place. It's where the beautiful people live. And the story basically asks the reader, what happens when someone comes in and rocks the boat? Or if you want to be analytical, let's look at butterfly theory. Let's look at what happens when the domino effect comes into a beautiful place. Basically, little fires start everywhere.
Interesting metaphor.
Thank you. But it wasn't mine. It was Celeste Eng, and she is a fabulous author. And what she has created, it a little bit reminds me, if our readers enjoyed Gentleman in Moscow, I think they're going to like the structure of this book as well. I know it was, both books were incredibly popular in the groups. But she sets up this labyrinth, these machinations, this intricate calibration of plot and character that truly isn't confusing because she's such a clean writer. And what ends up happening is you're looking at really serious topics like abortion, adoption, surrogatism,
surrogacy. Sure.
Thank you.
So great themes in this.
Yeah, amazing themes.
You're so popular that we get so many emails for our monthly book club segment. If you want to facilitate a book club group, just email Stacy, whether it's this book or another book. Email her at bookclub@wjct.org. Of course, you do a monthly event at the San Marco Books and More in the San Marco Square. Your underwriter for this segment. Mm-hmm. People flock from all around to see you in person there. And you do that every month. You also are going to be part of something at the Jacksonville Public Library.
The National Library Week is coming up, so I'm excited. I'll be talking about, on April 14th at the library, I'll be talking about strong women, strong protagonists that we've read recently in our book selections. And I think it'll be a very interesting discussion. Mocha will have a little surprise for us there as well. We're excited about that. So it'll be a very interesting way to kind of get an overview of some books that we've read lately from the perspective of strong women. You know, and speaking of strong, it's becoming, I have to draw more and more strength from within, Melissa, when I'm facilitating these book groups. And the reason being, I always say, leave your baggage at the door. Leave the politics, the religion, the problems with whatever, the traffic. You're going to come in and we're going to really immerse ourselves in an hour and a half of literature and exchanging ideas from differing perspectives and learn from one another. But what's happening is it's harder and harder for me to keep the outside from trickling in. And it happened in this book because there are so many strong opinions. And you have to look at things such as who should have a baby? Should it be a family of privilege, or should it be the mother, the birth mother, who has absolutely nothing, no grasp of the language, no understanding how culture works, et cetera. So that one issue, domino effects throughout the book, in the back, on the backdrop of Shaker, and it makes for introspection because you start defending yourself and then you start thinking, well, maybe I'm not right here. And that is the sign of a good author. So if you enjoyed this book, you'll enjoy Everything I Never Told You, which she also wrote as well.
And this is, of course, your March selection, Little Fires Everywhere. In a new twist on your monthly segment with us, you're going to end with a quote from the book that sort of sums it all up. What's that quote?
Okay, here we go. This is from Celeste Eng, Little Fires Everywhere. Sometimes you have to scorch everything to the ground and start over. After the burning, the soil is richer and new things can grow. People are like that too. They start over. They find a way.
That's a quote that could apply to a lot of situations, isn't it?
I know. I just was watching the news before I came in here and I saw the word fires and you know me with the words. I mean, it's so true. I mean, it applies to so many things.
It
and
does.
And that's the beauty of literature, isn't it?
And that's the beauty of you, Stacey Goldring, our lover of literature, our book club leader, our fearless book club leader. You can check her out online by emailing her at bookclub@wjct.org. Let her know your thoughts on books that we should be featuring on the show.
That'd be great.
Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Bye.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Next on 1A, following the money when it comes to President Trump. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.